All right, welcome back to episode 2 of Site Selectors, Our People, You Got Two. Again, my name is Devin Hilsden Smith. I have spent a decade in economic development, brand new to the world of corporate site selection. And today we're going to dig into the concept of navigating the Site Selector Economic Developer Partnership. We started in episode 1, giving a brief overview of the importance, the roles, the themes that come with this relationship, this dynamic, how it impacts our abilities as professionals to find the right solution for a corporate investment decision, whether that be from the perspective of the client itself that is looking to ensure that their new widget factory is going to be in the right place for them when it comes to labor and talent and cost effectiveness and ability to interact with their supply chain. But we also looked at the fact that we need to look at the community side. Does the community itself truly want, does it truly want that potential secretive codenamed Project Paperclip to even come to their community when they don't know much about it up front? So the purpose of today is going to be to dig a little bit deeper. We started to paint the themes around relationships. We're getting into the broader theme of how this is kind of like dating on the corporate community side of things. But today we're going to look at down to the actual people level, right? We're going to look at how these individuals work on either side of the coin. So we're going to start off today with site selectors, and that's where I am now, right? And a bit of a caveat, right? I've been doing this for a year and a half. I don't know what the hell I'm doing, plain and simple. Do I make sure that the results are worthy of my client's decision-making? Absolutely. That's why I get hired, and that's why my clients trust me, right? But I'm consistently, day in and day out, trying to figure out how to do it better and how to make my product better, not only for my clients, but for the communities in which they determine that they are going to invest. So site selectors, from what I've been able to figure out at this point, like I said in the first episode, we are professionals who assist businesses in finding suitable locations for new facilities to expand within, relocations into, or even determining whether or not they're going to stay in those communities. We often work as part of larger firms, whether that be accounting firms, commercial real estate firms. Sometimes we work independently. There's boutique firms that all they do is focus in on site selection. And site selectors are there to bridge the gap, between businesses and potential sites. Now, I'll tell you this. I've interacted with a lot of site selectors in my, you know, let's just call it 12 years now, including both sides of the coin. And there's one thing I can say that is a truism about all site selectors. They deeply care about what they're doing. And we take an immense amount of pride in our work product because it's a crowded field. It seems as though it's only a select group of individuals that are chosen, if you will, to get into this profession. But it's a very crowded field, and it becomes readily apparent to clients and to the world writ large if our work product is subpar. And so, and this is a statement for everybody, right? The number one thing that we all have to protect as individuals, as professionals, is our reputation, whether that be your reputation as a human being and how you treat fellow human beings, or whether that be your reputation as a practitioner of your trade, as a crafter of your art, right? Ooh. Oh, and we all probably just heard, okay, there's that sound quality again. We have got some major storms rolling through here, even though there's blue skies. Not really sure how that works. So reputation is key. And I'll tell you that as an economic developer, one thing that I was always the most frustrated about was, why is it that whenever I go through all of this work responding to an RFI, hosting site selectors in for familiarization tours, for site visits, why is it that sometimes I just get ghosted, right? And that always gave me just a real bad taste in my mouth. I knew these people, right? From conferences, from networking events, and I knew that they were good individuals. Their personal reputations were solid, but when it came down to getting the work done, I couldn't, there's so much cognitive dissonance because I would get so frustrated by the lack of humanity in the process. And that partially I'm learning comes down to the fact that as a site selector, yes, it matters what communities think about you and how you treat economic developers and how you treat communities. But at the end of the day, you have a fiduciary responsibility to your clients. And sometimes you find yourself in a position where you are simply not able to provide the level of service across the table to the economic developers with whom you may be friends that you want to be able to provide. Sometimes you're limited by way of the scope of your engagement or the confidentiality that you're placed within or placed under. But the other thing is, you have to remember for site selectors that are working on the national stage, there are thousands of communities that are vying to get our attention day in and day out, and there's only so many hours in a day. And I will tell you what, I am not the most efficient person in the world at managing that many touch points. I don't think anybody is. And so one bit of advice to economic developers, as you're getting frustrated, first of all, maintain that frustration. It's totally warranted, but the point of the tongue-in-cheek title for this entire series, site selectors are people too. Don't forget, we are dealing with our own issues on our end, and we are doing our best day in and day out. We're doing our best to not only be consummate professionals, but to treat you like the human beings that you are, the friends that you are. So I'm going to leave it at that. Don't take anything personal by a site selector not giving you the attention that, that quite frankly, you deserve every single time that they interact with you. Just recognize that we are just as busy as you are. If you think of it as, you know, going a mile wide or a mile deep, you have to be able to go a mile deep into your community and understand every little minutia about it, right? You have to remember that site selectors are forced to go a mile wide across hundreds, if not thousands, of communities, multiple clients, keeping everybody at peace and treated properly. And so the next time that you get frustrated, just remember it's okay to reach out and say, "Hey man, you asshole, I've reached out multiple times asking for just some sort of feedback. Why did we miss out on this project? What happened? Hey, I've invited you to come to our community and I can't get you to even pick up the phone. What is going on?" Don't take it personally. All right. We feel bad enough as it is, and I guarantee you that. Don't think that we're these faceless, you know, shills of individuals that don't even care how our silence impacts you. The main thing I want you to take away is that we truly do, and there's a lot of stress and anxiety that comes with it. At least for me, I've found. I do my best, and one thing that I am hell-bent on maintaining as my MO is if you have done me the favor of submitting and responding to an RFI, I don't care if you're site number 60 out of 60, I'm going to offer up a postmortem report. We're going to get on the phone and talk about it. Now, it may not come within a week or two from when you found out that you weren't selected. It might be a month or, heck, it might be half a year later, right? And that's frustrating. But know that we all try. There's a fantastic group out there called the Site Selectors Guild, and they epitomize the effort of site selectors to do better by economic developers and to help economic developers understand how they can help us do better by them, if that makes sense. So just know, again, we're all humans and we're all trying to work within a very chaotic, complex, and intricate environment. And so I just want to throw that out there, right? Because again, I want this podcast to be about the human side of economic development and site selection. So site selectors, again, our roles and responsibilities, first first and foremost, our responsibility is to our clients. They pay us to do this work and they expect results, right? And so we are constantly, if you think that a site selector's main job is to do site visits and to give you, you know, ridiculous turnaround times for RFIs and to go out and network at these conferences and speak at these conferences, you're seeing the tip of the iceberg. I am, on an average day as a site selector, tied to my computer with multiple Excel sheets open, trying to find order within chaos. We are conducting market research. We're analyzing data. We're putting out properly crafted RFIs to receive the right data from economic developers. We are not only working with economic developers to find the right data sources, but we're going not around, but we're augmenting that by doing and conducting our own desktop analyses. And so I am a data junkie. I am a fiend for good quality, manipulatable information. When I say manipulatable, I don't mean I can make it say whatever I want. I mean information that I can actually use as I'm trying to analyze. I am consistently trying to evaluate a whole host of factors across a number of subject matters, such as infrastructure, workforce availability, taxation incentives, ongoing cost, initial cost. My gosh, roles and how a community's location may fit within the company's global supply chain. So we're evaluating factors, we're conducting research, we're analyzing data. As I mentioned before, we're negotiating with local governments, property owners, utilities, workforce partners. So just remember that site selectors, if we're trying to understand the players, first and foremost, we are, and I've got a term I want to use, but I'm not going to, but we are fiends for data, right? That is, we live and breathe within some sort of data management program, whether that be as basic as Excel, Power BI, you know, what have you. And we also then have to take all of that, and when we find the order within the chaos, we then have to take all of that and find a way to distill it down so that it doesn't lose its impact, but so that our clients can understand it. And yes, my team, at least, we are fully transparent with our clients as to the background. They have access to everything. But the further up that decision-making poll that things get within the company, the further up our analyses get, the more distilled we have to make our presentations without losing the impact or the truth behind the data itself. And so we live in data. But, back to my point and the overall point that we are going to continuously make on this podcast, data is only one aspect. If I'm at 11 p.m. at night, realizing I'm running up against a wall and I am just absolutely screwed because I don't have the right type of data that I need or I don't have clarity, I need to make sure I have a strong enough relationship with that economic developer on the other side that I can send a note and hopefully, so long as I'm not putting too much stress on them, I can get the response I need that next morning, right? And if I don't have a good relationship with you, say I've screwed you in the past, right? Say I've done something just abysmal to you, right? Like made you respond to a 500 cell RFI spreadsheet, and when you submitted it, I say something along the lines of, you know what? You didn't even fill out these four cells. Screw you. Good luck in the future. Are you really going to have much motivation besides the fact that it's your job and you have to, but are you going to really have that much motivation to help me out when I'm stuck in a bind? Probably not. Right? Probably not. So site selectors, we are consistently trying to leverage our relationships and leverage our data to find the right decisions.
So we're going to go ahead and take a break. We just went over kind of an intro. We jumped into the human side of what it's like to be a site selector day in and day out. And when we come back from the break, we're going to flip the script and we're going to take a look at what it takes to be one of those superheroes called economic developers. See you in a sec.
Okay, and we're back. So
So now we're going to take a look at economic developers as professionals.
Economic developers, the other players in this industry, you know, typically local government or state government officials, agencies, nonprofit organizations, typically 501c6s, that are charged with a certain jurisdiction where they are responsible for increasing the economic well-being, right? You're to promote economic growth, attract investment, create jobs within your communities. And in an economic developer's world, getting your community to the forefront of site selectors' minds, that's pretty much job number one when it comes to attraction and expansion projects. When I have a new client as a site selector, and I'm trying to put together a very quick market survey or market intelligence report, and I need to be able to point out some of the best in the country, you want me to be thinking about your community as one of the top five, right? Now, those top five might just be a sample, and it may never go anywhere, but you want to be memorable. And not just memorable because you have a solid product offering, but because you as an individual, as an economic developer, have proven to me time and time again that you're somebody I can trust and that you're somebody that is going to be easy to work with. And guess what? Another tagline for this podcast, you need to be able to have some work, or have some work. You need to be able to get to work, but have some fun too. Because this is a very, very intense profession. And guys, if we can't have some fun, it's too much at the end of the day, right? And so that's why there's conferences where we get to know each other and we get to go out and have a beer and cheers each other and just talk about our kids and about our pets and about our lives and get to know each other. And I tell you what, those economic developers, I've already learned this last year and a half, that remember things that are going on in my life and me remembering what's going on in their lives. And we have those, that camaraderie, you become a reputational stand-in for your community. You become your community to me. And that's important because if I'm trying to think through in a very quick turnaround for a client, if I'm trying to think through, my gosh, who am I going to put in front of these folks, you know, at first blush up front? You want me to think of you and go, you know what? That dude or that lady, they rocked it. Let's put it out. Let's put them out there as kind of the creme de la creme, what we should be expecting as we go through this process. So economic developers, yep, it's reputational. It's about being responsive. It's about creating the relationships. But it's not just with us. I mean, my gosh, you have to keep so many cooks that are in your kitchen all working together. You have to be able to develop strategies with multiple partners. You have to be able to collaborate with businesses, chambers of commerce, other stakeholders, both state level, local level, regional. Oh my gosh, regionalism. We're going to have to do an entire episode on regionalism. Private sector, public sector. You're going to have companies that don't like each other, right? Within your own community. And you have to try to keep everybody happy. Internally as in your own community, you are also serving as a figurehead, as a problem solver, as an ombudsman. That's the second time I've used that term. I've learned that not too many people know what an ombudsman is, right? An ombudsman is somebody within an organization that is able to help others from outside of the organization navigate your organization's structure, right? When you're thinking of it internally, an ombudsman is also somebody that can solve problems between different various stakeholder groups, to make sure that you're finding that win-win solution, or at least find the truth. And then, of course, it comes down to facilitating the site visits, providing information, and hopefully at the end of the day, standing up there with those bright, you know, scissors or that bright shovel and smiling and taking pictures because you've landed the big one. So there's a dance. As I mentioned in the last episode, there's a dance between these two. I'm going to start off by saying we have mutual goals. Right, we have mutual goals. Both site selectors and economic developers aim for economic prosperity. That's why we're in this profession, right? Economic prosperity for the businesses that are investing a ridiculous amount of capital and making pledges to hire a ridiculous amount of new employees, economic prosperity for our communities, right? As site selectors, we recognize that, and this is what motivates me every day getting up, is that I know that when I find the right solution for my client and we're able to sign on the dotted line, we are, hopefully, as long as we've done our jobs properly, we're making that community, we're changing the trajectory of that community's future for the better, for decades and generations, hopefully, to come. And that is a rewarding and fulfilling thought, to play a role in that, right? I'm not the one that's investing my own capital, but if my role in this process allows for a community to thrive and become better for it, that's a wonderful thing. So economic developers, you might be on that side of the table, but don't forget how much we care on this side of the table as well, ensuring that we find the right fit. Because as a segue here, and there's gonna be a lot of segues, I think you've probably already noticed that this is a stream of consciousness podcast, so no filter, you're gonna get a lot out of me on this. And you know what? And that happens too. I forgot where I was going with that. Oh, here it is. So I also recognize that if we don't do our jobs, and you sell us very well and we sell you very well, but at the end of the day, we haven't found the truth, we haven't found that order within the chaos, and the decision is made and the company comes to town and they invest and they build the $500 million new factory and start hiring all these folks, what happens if that was the wrong decision? And all of a sudden, the impact on the utilities, on the wastewater treatment plant, on the power grid is so overburdensome that the negatives outweigh the positives of the company coming to town. Or what happens if you've been very good at doing your job as a representative for the community and a salesperson, that you sold us on the fact that, yep, the population and the workforce is here, and my company builds this facility, and 6 months in, they are 50% behind hiring schedule. Because guess what? The truth wasn't actually found. Not only is the company going to fail, but I guarantee you, your community is going to fail. Because at the end of the day, when the company has to shutter its doors and move on because it couldn't find the people it needed or it couldn't get the power it needed without overloading the grid, when it becomes adversarial at that point, everybody's pointing fingers. If you're dealing with a large publicly traded company, that needs to be able to keep its shareholders around the world confident in its abilities, it's not going to be their fault. It's going to be the community's fault. It was the community that screwed this up is going to be the messaging. And you don't ever want that, right? Now, I don't have any clients that have done that, right? But I know that's happened. And it happens time and time again. And that only goes to harm your community and the reputation of your community for the future. So we all have mutual goals. Find the right fit. Aim for economic prosperity. We, as site selectors, seek optimal locations for our specific projects. Economic developers seek optimal investment and job creation for their specific communities. And so, speaking back to what I was getting at before, reputation and communication, and collaboration are critical. Pick up the phone. If you don't have a relationship with that site selector, it doesn't matter. Pick up the phone and start that relationship. And throughout the life cycle of a project, regular dialogue is crucial. It is absolutely crucial. And you know what? Despite the different areas that we are pulled into and the amount of folks trying to get our attention, when it comes down to the nuts and bolts of a project, we're going to pick up the phone to site selectors when you call if we're working a project together, because we need the information you're going to give us. You are going to share data with us. You're going to share incentives availabilities. You're going to share community benefits. You're going to share what you want, what you don't want, what's possible, what's not possible. And all of that are data points. And you're only going to feel comfortable enough having that conversation with one of us if you trust us enough to share that information. It is then incumbent upon site selectors to provide feedback.
we need to do a better job at providing feedback in this industry. And I'm going to be insistent upon that fact. I know, fellow site selectors, that we don't have enough hours in the day already, but you know as well as I do that communities can only get better if we provide feedback to help them get better, right? Otherwise, it is such a siloed effect, and communities can fall into the rhythm of what they're told they're supposed to do versus actually having real-world examples from us. And so taking the time out of our days to have a 30-minute conversation and explain this is why you didn't make it, or this is why we didn't consider you, or this is why I'm not really sure I want to put something in front of your community. Guess what? If that economic developer is worth their salt, they're going to listen to your feedback, digest it, and that community is going to become better and more competitive because of that short conversation. And so the next time that you have a project where that community would be a great fit because of the supply chain, they're going to be better. And so that can only be better for our clients, that can only be better for their communities, and isn't that the goal at the end of the day? The other thing in this dance, again, is the fact that there's challenges. There's challenges. Site selectors have to balance confidentiality with transparency. Economic developers have to balance confidentiality with transparency. But if you have the relationship, if you have the relationship that comes naturally, it's okay to have a conversation with somebody on the other side of the table if you know them well enough, and to ask a question that you don't think they're going to be able to answer. Guess what? Best case scenario, they can answer it. Worst case, they say, listen, man, we've known each other for a while. You know I can't answer that question, but here's something I can give you to help you maybe dance around that topic, right? The other aspect that's a challenge is conflicting interests. So tax incentives, for example, tax incentives cannot make a bad site good. They cannot make a bad site good. They can make a good site great. But at the end of the day, so long as the lifespan of a new corporate investment, a new factory, is going to be for decades, right? They're going to be in a community for decades. Incentives typically run somewhere from 10 to 15 years for initial investment, and then they're done. It's a Band-Aid, right? But they're important because they help to offset that upfront capital investment. And it also showcases a community's desire and thirst and hunger for your client's investment. It shows how much you want us, right? It really does. It's not a popularity contest, but when you've got 60 different communities vying for your attention, you have to find a way to stand out. And so you're going to have to offer the best incentive package possible, even if the overall impact, you know, is not as important as the ongoing labor costs or the ongoing taxation costs. But there's a conflict of interest here, because we may have offers in front of us when it comes to incentives that are too rich for your blood. And guess what? That's okay. And that's another one of those transparency and communication relationship matters. Because if it's too rich for your blood, you want to be able to say thanks but no thanks to the site selector. We're not going to be able to compete in this field. Site selector is going to give you some feedback. And guess what? Because you have a solid relationship, they're going to continue to come back to you because you're honest and you cut bait early enough that we didn't all waste time together. Because an increased incentive offering is going to be at odds, if you get to a certain level, with the impact it has on a community. Economic developers, if you offer to abate taxes for a super abatement for 20 plus years, 100%, let's say you have that ability, and that means that the company is not paying into the local funds necessary to maintain and upkeep the roads, which, by the way, their semis are beating the hell out of on a day-to-day basis. If you go too far with your incentives, was that really the right fit for your community? And when the roads are beat to hell and the client's semis are not able to make it from point A to point B without getting a flat, is that good for them as well, right? So there's always going to be a push and a pull, but you have to remember that there's always going to be conflict. And that right there is the crux of our interactions, finding that sweet spot.
I always say that the best deals are those in which both sides walk away feeling a little uncomfortable, right? You don't want to walk away feeling like you took the other side, you took advantage of the other side. You want to feel like you got a good deal. But if you still have a little bit of, you're still feeling a little uncomfortable, you know, I guarantee the other side is feeling the same way, and that probably indicates you found the right middle ground. And if you're not able to get to that point, it probably indicates it's not the right project, right? So we're going to take a break, and the rest of this episode is going to be some case studies, some best practices. We're actually going to have a conversation. I'm going to scrub names. I'm going to scrub identities, but we're going to have a chat about how this dance plays out. We're going to take a look at, from a real world perspective, how you navigate the site selector economic developer partnership, even when things get rough. All right, let's have some fun. We're going to talk about some real life experiences that I've had and that I've run into, and we're going to start painting some pictures, right? So let's start with some of the more fun stories. Those of issues that have arisen that have caused problems, right? So where the relationship wasn't strong enough, the understanding wasn't strong enough, and something happened. So when I was working at the local development authority I referenced, you know, it was a massive, massive property called the River Ridge Commerce Center. 6,000 acres of land. And we had the opportunity, we had a lot of opportunities to go after what you call mega projects, right? Projects that are taking over 500 acres, 1,000 acres, that are proposing $1 billion plus in investment, thousands of jobs. And typically you would assume, right, especially when certain shops that you, site selector shops that you are familiar with and you have good relationships with those folks, you would assume that they would only bring really solid projects to the table, right? So we had a project approach us one day. We got the RFI and we filled it out, did our work, submitted it, and we got a call. We got a call back, and we were told that, hey, we have a really good shot at this thing. We'd like to have a conversation about, you know, what you're able to do to lessen the burden on our client from a CapEx and operational expenditure perspective. So dollars and cents, right? Incentives. So we had the conversation and we were still excited, absolutely blown away. I mean, this was a representation of over a $1 billion project with, you know, 2,000 jobs. We were told they were going to be paid, you know, at least 50% over the local average wage. I mean, this was a home run. No significant impacts to the grid, to environmental. I mean, this was exactly what we had dreamt about. So we were going through it. And one thing that I was really good at as an economic developer was figuring out who the company was ahead of time before I was told, piecing things together, right? And so I started digging, and all I could find, all of my sources pointed towards this $1 billion project was not, the name behind it wasn't a household name, a publicly traded company with a significant cash flow and balance sheet. It was a startup. And I thought that maybe I had completely lost my mind and I went down the wrong path, right? So eventually the time came after we put a lot of time and effort into it. And oh, by the way, I had a very, very sophisticated board of directors that would question me every time I brought projects in, as they should. As hard as that is for an economic developer, you know, that's what makes the decision better. And I kept saying, no, I know the site selector. I know the site selector. He or she would not bring us something that wasn't real. We're told now we're in the top two sites. And finally, we got on the phone with the site selection group, and they said, okay, so do you have any idea who so-and-so is? And I said, I thought I knew who it was, but I think I'm wrong based on the size of the investment, but is it this firm? And of course, their jaws dropped. And how did you know that? And I looked at them, I went, seriously, they're a startup, guys. And I went, well, But their growth pattern is right. You hear all that. You don't understand exactly how big this is and how hard they're going to be pushing. And they have all of these commitments and they've been through this, you know, their investment rounds and they've got this group as a partner and this group as a partner. And I'm going, well, okay, these partners and these investors are big names. Maybe that starts to give us some credibility. So I said, let me think about it. All right, I'll call you back. So I called them back after thinking through it a bit, and I said, listen, you're effectively asking us to invest in this company's future by some of your needs, right? To help lessen the pain of the upfront cost, the cash outlays and operational costs. You want free land, which is always a thing, but you want free land and you want 100% tax abatement, which is going outside of our comfort zone. So here's a middle ground. Company's just been through Series A investment round. And so, you know, the documentation surrounding feasibility and financial wherewithal, their business plan, it exists to be able to, you know, lock down those partners that they have. So put us under a very strict NDA and send me the documents so I can do my own due diligence. That way we're not wasting each other's time. And they said, yeah, sure. Yeah, we can do that. We can do that. We can do that. Week later, hey, where's your updated offer? Where's the documentation I asked for? Well, we need the offer really soon because, you know, we're running into the end of the runway on this thing. Okay, I really need the documentation. My board's not going to allow me to put forth a more aggressive offer unless I see it. And then all of a sudden I get an email with an attachment. I think, hey, there it is. Nope. It's a pitch deck. That's a pitch deck. And so the nice thing is I had a strong enough relationship with this site selector that was the head of this group that I was able to give him or her a call and say, listen, I'm confused. And I'm sorry, but unless this gets better, I'm going to have to do something that economic developers hate to ever do. And I'm going to have to say no. And so we went through a few more rounds, but the fact that I was able to pick up the phone and have that conversation helped us to all realize that at the end of the day, that site selector was able to temper expectations with their client. And I was able to temper expectations with my board. And yeah, at the end of the day, we all had to walk away. But because we had the relationship and we knew each other well enough, we were able to navigate a very difficult situation surrounding confidentiality. And nobody was bruised at the end of it. Right now, I will tell you this, and I'm never afraid to admit when I'm wrong. This company is now invested elsewhere in the country, and it seems as though they're actually doing quite well. So did I make the wrong decision? You know, hindsight's 20/20. If you look at it now, yeah, I did. But from the information that I had in front of me as an economic developer, I made the right decision. So that was an example of one that didn't go so well. But at the end of the day, because of the relationship, everything was kind of... The issues were mitigated, right? Another example of a strong relationship between an economic developer and a site selector is one that I've had recently on this side of the table. Big project, a multi-billion dollar project within, you know, one of these industries that everybody wants. And because of some geopolitical considerations, we had to be very careful about which states we were going to send the RFI to. And so out of the contiguous 48 states, we ended up sending it to 15 states. Well, we thought we had it right, right? We're not perfect on the side, right? We utilize the data we have in front of us. We thought we had it right. And we sent out the RFI. We gave them 2 weeks because I like to give more time, as much time as possible, especially for a very large project like this. And we were about halfway through when I went and had lunch with a state EDC. It was one of these, you know, they came to town and did a great job at getting in front of us and having conversations. And I was sitting there talking to one of the folks from the EDC, and they asked me, what projects do you have going on? I said, well, there's one right now that's absolutely massive, but I wasn't able to consider your state for it. They looked at me and they said, why? I said, well, it's my understanding you have a policy on the books that would indicate that my client, due to some geopolitical considerations, would not be welcome. They looked at me and they said, can you expand upon that? Now, mind you, I did not have a relationship with the state EDC until this launch. And so this was a great starting off point because I walked them through the issues and they very quickly were able to convince me that, guess what? We had it wrong. We absolutely had it wrong to cut them and not to consider them. And so very quickly, I went back to the team and I said, hey, we made a mistake. We need to issue the RFI to the state. They've made it very clear to me that the geopolitical considerations are not what we thought they were. And we got them included. Now, kudos, hats off to this group because they came in halfway through and they only had like not even a week. I think they had 5 days to respond to one of my RFIs, which is typically going to be over 100 data points that we ask you to pull together. And we gave them a shot. And they submitted their offering, a couple of different sites. And guess what? One of those sites made it up into the top five out of like 50 different sites that were submitted. This just goes to show you that when you don't have the relationship and you don't have the conversations, you're not finding the truth that's required for these types of decisions. Thankfully, it's a little too late, but it worked out. We developed our relationship and I was able to get the RFI issued to them and they performed extraordinarily well. Now, the end result there, like I indicated, they were top five. They didn't win the project, but you know what happened? Now I have a strong relationship and I have been on more calls with groups from this state getting to know each other and they are getting, like I said before, they're becoming one of those areas of the country that are at the front of my mind when I'm trying to think through who I'm going to send RFIs to. It's all about the relationship. And they very easily could have told me I was a dumbass for not considering them and oh, now we're too far along and, you know, looks like your shop doesn't know what it's doing, which, you know, I guess would have been, you know, well-founded. But instead they said, hey, no problem. Include us in the process. Let us see if we can pull something together. They did. I then had another site to be able to put in front of the client, which helped us to think through the project even better. And it's going to make the end result for that client that much better because we've had that many more data points to consider. And I now have a strong relationship with this state, with the individuals that were representing this EDC. And I couldn't be more pleased to call at least one of them friends. The other ones, screw them. I don't like them. No, I'm kidding. At least one of them friends, right? And that's what it's all about. It comes down to the relationships. So I hope in closing here, a few things have come out. Number one, site selectors are not infallible. We have issues too, right? We think we know what we're doing, but when you make assumptions, you know what that does. It makes an ass out of you and me. And I learned a lesson on that one. We pivoted. I apologized. I took responsibility for not including them originally. And look at the wonderful relationship that we're now forming. The other thing I hope you take from this is despite how messy things can get, as long as you maintain open dialogue, frequent and open dialogue throughout the lifespan of a project and beyond, you're going to get closer to finding that win-win scenario. And that can only be good for everybody involved. So that's a bit of the dance, right? It's an art. It's a science. I might be hellaciously focused on, I think I use that. Yeah, hellaciously focused on site selection by way of data and process. But if you don't have the relationships and you don't recognize that economic developers are people too, and if economic developers don't recognize that site selectors are people too, then the staleness and the sterileness of sterileness, gosh, I'm gonna start looking up words before I talk here. It's harmful. And so treat each other like you would want to be treated and respect each other. And site selectors, let's do a better job at providing feedback. Economic developers, please do a better job at looking in your hearts and recognizing As always, site selectors are people too. So in our next episode, when we come back, we are going to then dive. We're going to take a little bit of a turn, and we're going to talk about bridging the gap, right? So we've talked about the dynamics, who the folks are. We're going to get into the disparities in the relationship and how those arise and impact site selection decisions. So the next episode is going to be Bridging the Gap. Once again, this is Devin Hilston Smith reminding you that site selectors are people too.
Just a heads up, views expressed in this podcast are solely my own and are not attributable to any employers, whether past or present. Thank you.